You will note that this beast is very much like the beast that we have in the Revelation in chapter 7. I mean in Daniel chapter 7. You have four beasts in that chapter. Remember that those beasts are a lion, a bear, a leopard, and a nondescript beast with its 10 horns. Now, it's changed a little bit here because this beast has heads. Now, of course, we do have four heads on the leopard. The rest of them only have one head as far as we know. Well, we have a description of this beast in verse 2. And the beast which I saw was likened to a leopard. And that, of course, is one of the beasts in Daniel 7, and it represented Medo-Persia, with two heads, Media and Persia. So here's a part of the old empire still in the future. And is still there yet today, part of the old Medo-Persian empire. Ever see a Persian rug? They do some beautiful work. And his feet were as the feet of a bear. So there's the bear. That represents... the bear represents Medo-Persia. What did I say a while ago? The leopard has four heads, and that, of course, is Greece. Well, let's see. When I get this straight again. A leopard, and his feet was the feet of a bear. All right, the leopard is Greece. The feet of a bear was Medo-Persia, and his mouth was the mouth of a lion, taking up to the head, which was the lion. Now, they're given in the reverse order here of what they were in Daniel 5. And, of course, this beast in verse 1 is the fourth one. So they're given here in the reverse order. And his mouth as the mouth of a lion, and the dragon, that old dragon, gave him his power and his throne and great authority. Now we must remember that these are composites or the figures. This beast primarily represents a governmental system. A kingdom. And yet, it is bound up in a person. I can remember when they said Kaiser was the beast of Berlin. People have always tried to find these things in contemporary history. Well, they aren't yet. This has to do with Israel. And Israel has to be on the scene when this is going on. He gave him his power, and he is the prince of the power of the air, so that would be great air power, and his throne as the seat of authority, and great authority. So Satan is putting up a system here, a kingdom at the last, which he wants to be so strong and so powerful that the millennial kingdom and never come. He's got a counterfeit that he wants all people to accept instead of accepting the kingdom which is to come, millennial kingdom. And so here you have Satan's pre-millennial kingdom, this great beast. Now, this beast has existed for some time and then was cut off in the present. A parenthesis, starting with AD 64, and will continue someday when God starts his program with Israel again, gets the prophetic clock going. That period is spoken of as 2 days in Hosea 6:2. Now, how much that means, whether that's 2,000 years, well, that remains, of course, to be seen. Now remember, this beast had 7 heads and 10 horns. And there were 10 crowns. And on the heads, not on the crowns, the names of blasphemy. And I saw one of his heads, as it were, wounded to death. And his deadly wound was healed, and all the world wondered after the beast. So one of these 7 heads were wounded to death, or got a deadly wound, a lethal stroke. And it was healed, and all the world wondered after the beast. Of course, it takes a miracle like that to make the world wonder. And they worshiped the dragon, which gave power unto the beast. This is devil worship, pure and simple, and we have it today. Not only in the heathen countries of the world, but right in civilized, or so-called civilized America. They have devil worshippers. And so they that worship the dragon, and they worship the dragon, which gave power unto the beast, and they worship the beast. Saying, who is like unto the beast? Who is able to make war with him? Now, as we find over in Daniel, it's this beast, this person, gains his power by flatteries. Until he has practically the nations all under him and is so powerful that none wouldn't want to make war with him. That's the picture we have. If any nation today were so powerful and had weapons way ahead of the rest of them and so on, and good store of them, of course, nobody would dare to attack that nation. And so this is the situation that's coming up. Now, we have two great powers in opposition to Christianity today. One communism, or really under one head, communism, but under two countries as a main ones, Russia and China. Both communistic powers, antagonistic to each other on the outside, working perfectly together on the inside. And I just heard on the radio today, and this is July the 17th, 1979, I just heard on the radio today that there is a sort of a plan or a suggestion on foot in Europe to organize 9 countries into a United States of Europe. Well, things are kind of in the boiling point, aren't they? Of course, now how much this may have to do with prophecy and future events and so on, I don't know. It just may be sort of setting the stage. It's not a fulfillment of any prophecy that I know of. I don't know that any prophecy has been fulfilled since A.D. 70 when Jerusalem was destroyed by Titus, and that was described in detail in Deuteronomy 28. Don't know that any prophecy has been fulfilled since that time. It's not a time of prophecy. It's not the... Well, we talk about the signs of the times. Well, this is not the time of the signs, that's all. When the salvation of God was sent to the Gentiles, and Israel taken off the scene, we've had a different economy entirely in the earth. And we might say that that has been one of the great turning points, if not one of the greatest turning points in world history. Because if the Jews had not rebelled and would not accept their Messiah, he would have come in AD 85 and set up his great kingdom. And that would have extended to 1085, which is just 10 years before the first crusade. Now you can begin to get a picture of events. So when the first crusade came, the millennium would have been over and been in the post-millennial kingdom, which is a period of time, a day and night for an indefinite period until they have new heavens and new earth. So history wouldn't have been what it is. They wouldn't have had the Crusades, wouldn't have had all of those wars and all that loss of life and so on. The millennial kingdom would have come in. But it's those sad words of tongue and pen. You know, it might have been. So there's going to be no trouble in that day, which may not be too awfully far from now, that they'll openly worship the dragon, Satan, and also his right-hand man, which no doubt in person is his actual son, a world ruler, or at least nearly so. And there was given unto him a mouth, speaking great things and blasphemies, and power was given to him to continue 42 months. So there is a length of your premillennial kingdom of Satan, his right-hand man, his son, 42 months, 3.5 years. The time of the great tribulation. Now he'll be coming into this power before this. This isn't sudden. You have about 17 years before this for him to accumulate all this power by his flatteries and so on. But when this time comes, at the midst of the last week, the 70th week, that Satan is cast out of heaven into the earth, and here we have him standing upon the sand of the sea, and we have this beast coming out, and power given unto him, and so on. Things are going to happen fast. And the blasphemies, of course, that indicates to us that he'll be against everything that is of God. And we see that movement in our own country today, trying to root God out of everything, schools, government, and all. The forces are at work. And succeeding to a great extent, too. And he opened his mouth in blasphemy against God to blaspheme his name and his tabernacle and them that dwell in heaven. Well, them that dwell in heaven. Well, of course, that could mean, first of all, the angels of God, the armies of Christ in heaven, not in the heaven of heavens, but in the heaven above us. It could also include the 144,000, because they're caught up at the beginning of the tribulation. They don't go through it. They're the first fruits of the overcomers. We've, of course, gone into that before this. We're going to have some more about the overcomers in a short time. Or, I mean, the 144,000. And it was given unto him. This son of Satan, to make war with the saints. And this, of course, is prophesied by Daniel 7:21. And also in Daniel 8:11, as your notes say. Make war with the saints, God's people, and to overcome them. And power was given him over all kindreds and tongues and nations. And all that dwell upon the earth shall worship him. That is, whose names are not written in the book of life of the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world. Now, I wonder how many at that time will have their names written in the Lamb's book of life. What fraction of the population of the whole earth? Be a pitiful small remnant of that. And the same is true today. We have churches and we have members and all that sort of thing, but God's people are very few. Very few. Just as soon as it isn't profitable to be a Christian, to belong to a church or something like that, the great bulk of these folk will turn right over to the worship of Satan, because that'll be profitable then. Yes, it takes a little tribulation or something like that to tell you who are the true worshipers of God. My, oh my, you just shake the tree of Christendom and a little bit like that, and the mate believers, the hypocrites and all of those will fall off like unripened olives or figs or whatever that wither on the tree. And so those who worship are those whose names are not written in the book of life of the Lamb. Now, we have book of life back in the Old Testament. And Moses one time asked that his name might be taken out of the book of life, if God would just save Israel, he was going to destroy them. This is the book of the life of the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world. And it sort of indicates it to us that this is a special book of remembrance of the overcomers. Because after all, overcomers is the theme of the book of Revelation. Now, the book of life isn't from the foundation of the world. It's a book of life of the Lamb. And he, in the purposes and plans of God, was slain from the foundation of the world. That is, it was planned then. Or from or since the overthrow of the world. A better translation of the word foundation. So after the overthrow of the world, it was determined that Christ, the Son of God, should be the Lamb that would bring about the great redemptive purpose for God and the world people, with Israel as the center. This is not telling you about the heaven of heavens and about the church, which is the body of Christ yet. That's not revealed until you get to the last of the book of Acts. If any man have an ear, let him hear. Now, you probably have noticed when you read the second and third chapters of the Revelation that in every instance, in every one of those seven churches, the expression is, let him that hath an ear, let him hear. And it's to a corporate group, but here, if any man, any one person have an ear, let him hear. This is the eighth time that this occurs, and the last time. Seven times in the seven churches in chapters 2 and 3, and then it's repeated here in verse 9 in chapter 13. A little item to kind of keep in mind to keep things in order. Verse 10. And this needs a little explanation probably. He that leadeth into captivity shall go into captivity. And he that killeth with the sword must be killed with the sword. And this is quoted a great number of times. And yet, in looking at the Greek very carefully, one has to come to the conclusion that says this, if anyone is for captivity, into captivity he goeth. And if anyone is to be killed with the sword he is killed. During this great tribulation, there'll be lots of the saints killed, as we find up there in verse 7. Make war of the saints and overcome them. And so back in chapter 7, when we read that, we saw a great number that man couldn't number of those who had been lost their lives for the testimony, clothed in white, awaiting resurrection. And here's how it comes about. And so here is the patience and faith of the saints. And we have said before, and lest somebody should forget, the word patience is not lying down and taking it as people usually take the word today. It's perseverance. Is a perseverance and faith of the saints. because it says in Matthew 24 that he that endureth unto the end, that is the end of this great tribulation, shall be saved. Even if he goes into death, some of them live not their life unto the death, if they die for the witness, they're overcomers. Now, verse 11, we get another beast. We had one in verse 1. Verse 11, we have another one. And I beheld another beast coming up out of the earth, not out of the sea. And he had two horns like a lamb. And he spake as a dragon. Now, a lot of difference between a lamb and a dragon, isn't it? Think of a lamb as being meek and gentle and so on. And so he has two horns. And he spake like a dragon. And what does he do? And he exerciseth all the power of the first beast before him, and causeth the earth and them which dwell therein to worship the first beast, whose deadly wound was healed. Now, we said this first beast principally was a great political power. Here we have a great religious power. And he's in connection with this blasphemous first beast. And so there'll not only be a world power or dominion or kingdom or whatever, also a world religion springing up to support this. And remember, when you read your history, to find that kings usually had a religious system to support them in their power, to work on the superstitions of the people and keep them loyal to the king and so on. And so they, and he, this looks like as a horns of a lamb, spake as a dragon. And he exercises all the power of the first beast before him, and causes the earth and them which dwell therein to worship the first beast, whose deadly wound was healed as one of those horns. And he doeth great wonders. I said one of the horns, I meant one of the heads. One of the seven heads, there are 10 horns. And he doeth great wonders, so that he maketh fire come down from heaven on the earth in the sight of men. Now, a little bit like the magicians of Egypt, Jans and Jambres. They could imitate, you know, several of the miracles which Moses and Aaron did up to a certain point, and then they were stuck. And they had to admit that the finger of God was in that. They were magicians. They could do some remarkable sleights of hand. And, of course, remember that back of it was spirit power. Satan was energizing them. And this beast, lamb-like, is to deceive. And deceiveth them that dwell on the earth by the means of those miracles which he had power to do in the sight of the beast, saying to them that dwell on the earth that they should make an image to the beast which had the wound by a sword and did live. Idolatry. And it was prophesied by Paul that if people did not believe, that God would send them a strong delusion that they should believe a lie. And here it is. Here is a deceiver. And so this false prophet, this false religious system, deceives people by doing miracles. And then, by authority, he commands the people to make an image to the beast, which had the wound by a sword and did live. And he had power to give life unto the image of the beast. Just think, you make an image, a likeness of this beast, and he has power to give life to it. Or seemingly have life. Whether it's actual life or not, I don't know. It says that the image of the beast should both speak and cause as many as would not worship the image of the beast should be killed. All right, here is, like old Nebuchadnezzar, he put up his image out in the plain of Dura. And he says, now, when we start up the great band or orchestra, Everybody must fall down and worship this beast or this image. And what happened to those who didn't? Well, they were cast into a furnace of fire. Well, history is going to repeat itself, isn't it? And he causeth all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and bond, to receive a mark in their right hand or in their foreheads. So they're going to be marked. Marked men. And so we find that there will be marked men in the earth at that time. Those who belong to God will have the seal of God in their forehead. And those who belong to Satan will have his mark in their hand and also a mark on their forehead. And this mark, whether it's their social security number or some other number they have to have, that no man might buy or sell. Maybe it's a credit card. Save he that had the mark, or the name of the beast, or the number of his name. You see, we have foreshadowings and rumblings of these things in our society today. Monopolies. All that sort of thing. Governments interfering with the lives of its citizens and regulating every little thing that they do. And so there'll be a time coming when men can't buy or sell except to have that mark. Now we have a little something like that over in the land of Palestine today. If a Jew turns Christian over there, he has no job. They won't have anything to do with him. And if he doesn't have some help from outside or get out of there, he's going to be in a sorry mess. Here is wisdom. Let him that hath understanding count the number of the beast. For it is a number of a man, and his number is 666. The number of man all the way through is 6. You read back in Daniel and take the dimensions of the statue, that great colossus, and notice the use of the number 6 all the way through. Now here he is brought to an nth degree. It's 666. 3 sixes. Or 3 S's. Because the letter S is the number for 6. It's rather interesting in connection with this number. Some things that have happened in the past, I can just give you one of them. For a long time, the Romans, of course, you know, Romans use letters of the alphabet for numbers. And nearly all of you have had some acquaintance with that. Many of your old Bibles have the chapter numbers in Roman numerals rather than Arabic. But in the Roman numerals, they used the 1, the I for 1, and the V for 5, and the X for 10, and the L for 50, and the C for 100, and D for 500. And that's as far as they went for many centuries. And then finally they needed larger numbers because they began to get into financial difficulties and great national deficits and all that sort of thing like they have today, and so they had to have a larger number. And so they added on the M, which stood for 1,000. But before they added on the M, you take those numbers I just mentioned, the I, and the V, and the X, and the L, and the C, and the D, and add them together, you get 666. Well, kind of interesting, isn't it? Of course, now it'd be 1,666. And of course, 1,000,000 was 1,000,000. Well, so much for chapter 13. That's not a very glorious outlook, but it's an earth scene, which has continued from verse 13 and chapter 12. That's a nursing right through to the end of chapter 13. Now we start chapter 14, we start a heaven scene again. And I looked, and lo, a Lamb stood on the Mount Sion. Now that's Mount Sion in the heavens above us, not the heaven of heavens. There's no Mount Sion there. This has to do with Israel. And with him 144,000, having his father's names written in their forehead. That is the Lamb's father. Right there is a Lamb in heaven, and 144,000. Now you see, we read once before about them and how that they were caught up. Now here they are, they're caught up and in heaven above. Having his father's name written in their foreheads. That's quite a contrast to the mark of the beast too, isn't it? And I heard a voice from heaven, as a voice in many waters, and as a voice of a great thunder. And I heard the voice of harpers harping with their harps. Now don't ask me, I've majored in music and all that sort of thing, but what these harps were they had at that time, I'm not sure. Now, I admire a great concert harp. It takes skill to play one of them, and the music is beautiful. But they weren't invented at this time. Whether this prophetic or something like that. But you know, the music that we have now will have no place in a perfect, state. Or we might say a perfect creation. For the scale of modern music is not exactly correct. It can't be. It's a compromise. And all who know music very well know that the piano has a keyboard in which there's a lot of compromise. Because if you put perfect force and fifths together, you would get more than an octave. It just happens that that's the way the tones work. And so the octaves are squeezed a little, not exact, because if you had a perfect octave, then your thirds and fourths would be so out of tune that you couldn't stand it. And so your piano tuner is very skilled, and he compromises and gives you a keyboard in which you can play in all keys. It wasn't invented too awfully long ago by Johann Sebastian Bach. A well-tempered clavichord. And so we can work in all modes or keys, which at one time they couldn't. They could only work in one mode or key, and maybe a couple of related ones put in with it. But now you can go the whole gamut. And of course, theoretically speaking, there would be, there's 12 of those half steps in a scale, so you could say we can play in 12 keys, couldn't we? Well, that's an interesting thing. So here are harpers playing harps. But I'm pretty sure that this music is not going to be a compromise like it is today. Imperfect. It'd be something that'd be perfect. Now, man has not been able yet to invent a perfect scale. They have worked at it, and they have worked at it. One man, a number of years ago, invented a piano that had quarter tones on it instead of half tones first. Quarter steps, we would say, to be scientifically correct. And he played some concerts on it, but it didn't take. And of course, there's a lot of stuff now passing for music that has no relation to it, so it's imperfect. When we examine the things of this earth and the things that we may enjoy, our colors, our art, and so on, we find them all of them, with impurities, imperfections. Theoretically, if you would take the three primary colors, a red, yellow, and blue, and mix them together, you'll get white. But I don't care how scientifically correct you may get these three colors, how pure you may get them, and when you mix them, You never can get a pure white. You can get a light gray. And, of course, there's enough impurity in them that will give you almost a black. Man and all of his inventions fall short, every one of them. You can take up any line you want to, light and electricity and so on. And it makes you wonder why these imperfections? And then we begin to wonder, well, what will be the perfect state light? Well, we just haven't any idea. Have you any idea what it'd be like to be under a perfect government? Isn't knowing the man, is it? Well, I can't go on and on with that. Verse 3, and they sung, as it were, a new song before the throne and before the four beasts, that is, the cherubim, and the elders, the 24. And no man could learn that song but the 144,000 which were redeemed from the earth. Now, as a usual thing, composers can compose music, and they always find somebody who's able to play it, learn it, so on. But here is something that nobody, no man can learn except 144,000. It's going to be something very, very special. Better than any concerts this earth has ever been able to produce, with all of their thousands in attendance. And these, 144,000, are they which were not defiled with women, for they are virgins. Now this tells us something. The worship at that time would be like the worship of heathen countries in ancient times. And it would be centered around sex, with their prostitution and their temples and so on. And this 144,000 have never received the mark. I've never gone into the defiling practices of the world government of that time and its religious system. And so that's why it says this. No doubt, most of them were married men. These are they which follow the Lamb whithersoever he goeth. That'd be a nice picture too, wouldn't it? Up in the heavens above us, where the throne, the temple, and the altar, so on, are situated, where God rules the earth. And here these 144,000 have been changed, caught up, equivalent to a resurrection, and they follow the Lamb whithersoever he goeth. These were redeemed from among men, being the first fruits unto God and to the Lamb, the first fruits of the overcomers. They are taken out because of their faithfulness and their purity before the tribulation even starts, as a first fruits, so that men might know what can be gained by standing firm, by enduring until the end of the tribulation. They have a picture given to them of just what they can attain unto. And in their mouth is found no guile. I could put that a little bit plainer. And in their mouth was not found the lie. They never spoke the lie, Satan's lie. That means that they never at any time cast any doubt upon God's word, as God said. They at no time ever denied the mortality of man, that he had an immortal soul. That's Satan's lie. They never said that. And they also did not think of themselves as being as God or gods. That is Satan's lie. They never put themselves on an equal with God. And so this 144,000 are without guile, not touched by the lie. And that is an awful thing. I think I'm getting about to the end of the time element here, so I suspect I better be calling this to a halt. And it is a good place, because here we start with the fifth earth scene, We have just finished the fifth heavenly scene, just five verses here, chapter 14, and then we go to the earth scene. And this is an angel flying in the midst of heaven with the everlasting gospel and so on. So let's begin with 14:6 the next time. Let's have a prayer. Dear Father, we do thank Thee for Thy Word, for Thy Word is truth. Thankful for the one it speaks of, for He is truth, the true and living way. And thankful that Thou hast spoken to us by Thy Spirit, taught us, that we might know Thy Word, which is concerning Thy Son, a record of Him, and the great redemptive purpose which He has performed, which He has accomplished. We're thankful for the revelation of the mystery, that the salvation has been sent to us Gentiles. Thankful that this has been expanded, showing us a heavenly calling and heavenly places, blessed with all spiritual blessings in the heavenlies, seated with Christ in the heavenlies, and awaiting His manifestation. Thankful we can tell these good things to people in many parts of the earth today, that there might be a few who would have a part in the church, which is the body of Christ, of which He's the head, that they might be to the praise of Thy glory. They might honor Him by acknowledging His headship, and they have a part in the heavenly places far above all. We do ask that Thou would guide and direct in all of our activities, that we may be able to present truth to as many men as possible, that we might make all men see what is the dispensation of the mystery in these days, as well as going back over these things in the rest of the Word concerning Thy people Israel. I hope that we may be faithful, that we might be able to get many to look into the book and search and see